Tonight we're reading from Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 14, text number 9. The other day after class, somebody asked a question. Tell me, what exactly are the modes of nature? And I said, that would be a good question to ask during class. So I hope if you have any questions at all, please ask them during class. But tonight we'll discuss what are the three modes of material nature, just so there's no doubt. Okay. Text number 9. Is that right? Yeah, okay. Sattvam sukhe sanyat. Sanjayati Sattvam Sukhe Sanjayati Raja Karmani Bharata Raja Karmani Bharata Jnanam Avrityatu Tama Jnanam Avrityatu Tama Pramade Sanjayat Yuda Pramade Sanjayat Yuda Satvam Sukhe Sanjayati Raja Karmani Bharata Jnanam Avritya Tuptama Pramade Sanjayat Yuta. Satvam Sukhe Sanjayati Raja Karmani Bharata Jnanam Avritya Tutama Pramade Sanjayat Yuta. Satvam Sukhe Sanjayati Raja Karmani Bharata Sanjayati Raja Karmani Bharata Jnanamavritya Tutama Pramade Sanjayat Yuta. Ladies? Satvam Sukhe Sanjayati Raja Karmani Bharata Yatam Karvitya Tutama Pramade Sanjaya Chuta Satvam, the mode of goodness. Sukhe, in happiness. Sanjayati, binds. Rajaha, the quality of passion. Karmani, in fruit of activity. Bharata, O son of Bharat. Jnanam, knowledge. Avritya, covering. Tu, but. Tamaha, the quality of ignorance. Pramade, in madness. Sanjayati, binds. Utaha, it is said. Translation, O son of Bharat, the mode of goodness conditions one to happiness, passion conditions one to fruit of action, and ignorance, covering one's knowledge, binds one to madness. Purport. A person in the mode of goodness is satisfied by his work or intellectual pursuit, just as a philosopher, scientist, or educator may be engaged in a particular field of knowledge and may be satisfied in that way. A man in passion may be engaged in fruitive activity. He owns as much as he can and spends for good causes. Sometimes he tries to open hospitals, give it to charitable institutions, and so on. These are signs of one who is in the mode of passion. And the mode of ignorance covers knowledge. In the mode of ignorance, whatever one does is good neither for him nor for anyone else. Omagana tamananda shaganjana shalaka chakshin militamina tasmai shigurave namaha shi chaitanya manobisam sapitamina bhutale swayam upakadamayam tadati swabhutantika. So the qualities of material nature, or the modes of material nature, they are translated in various ways. One way is as ropes. The most literal translation is ropes, and perhaps you've seen there's a painting of like puppet masters, and they've got puppets on the strings, and those puppets are the people of this world, one acting as the boss and one acting as the worker, like this. So, in a way, this is, practically speaking, exactly what's going on, that everybody in this world is controlled by the influence of the modes of material nature. They think themselves to be independent and active out of free will, but their free will is limited by their conditioned nature, according to how they have associated with the gunas in the past. So the gunas, they act as both cause and effect. When I associate with the gunas by a particular habit of, say, drinking alcohol, that association colors my consciousness so that I will be inclined to continue to drink alcohol. Cause and effect, it's the same thing, right? So this is called conditioning. We become conditioned by the gunas, and this means that our future behavior is almost predictable given what our past behavior has been. So another way of defining the gunas is as consciousness determinants. Can you get that? Consciousness determinants. Determination? Okay. Something that determines something else. So, in other words, the gunas, they determine what the consciousness is. Okay. So, exactly according to the examples that I've just given. Anyway, that's one of the ways that I use to translate gunas in my writing or in speaking to the public at times. Because otherwise, people, they say, well, what are the gunas? Just like the person had asked after class the other day, well, what are the gunas? So we talk and talk about them, but they still don't know. Imperceptible influences of the material energy. And I gave the I gave the example before how one becomes infected. We become infected by a germ, and nobody can see a germ. It's imperceptible, but the effect is there. We know we become infected by the effect. So if we had a rash all over our body, that we know that, you know, this is not a normal healthy condition. I've become infected with something. And the doctor will be able to understand what is a disease according to the nature of the infection. So in the same way, the gunas are the infections of the material energy acting on the pure spiritual being. When the pure spiritual being contacts the material energy, he becomes infected by it. And that infection manifests as what is described here in this verse we're speaking of today. When one's infected by goodness, he becomes happy. That's a nice disease to have, right? Let's catch that one. When one's infected by Rajas, he becomes conditioned to fruitive work. He's always busy getting, working hard, making more and more money. And then when one is contaminated by tamas, by tamagun, by ignorance, then one is always engaged in various kinds of degrading activities, taking intoxicants, sleeping too much, cheating, lazy, quarrelsome, and so on. So these are the symptoms. And by the symptoms, one can understand that one has been infected by the disease of material nature, of the gunas. So it's, as we said, it's very important to know, because people, you know, we can't feel it. Just like any disease is imperceptible. You get an infection, you don't know you have anything until it shows up in terms of the symptoms. So in the same way, when we contact the gunas, it doesn't seem as though there's some problem. For example, say as a devotee, I have a custom, I have a habit that I go to eat at some favorite restaurant. I order pizza from some pizza place. A lot of devotees do this, actually, by the way. They'll order a pizza out from some pizza place. And if you just eat the pizza, it doesn't seem like anything significant. You can't feel like, oh, my God, oh, yes, I've eaten some food cooked by non-devotee. No, it's imperceptible. But Prabhupada writes that if one eats food that's cooked by a non-devotee, one develops a hellish mentality. So this is food to be avoided. You can't tell at the time. The influence is too subtle. But nonetheless, the influence is there, and it shows up in time. So as the influence becomes compounded, then it becomes to manifest in various ways. So the same thing even, right, for chanting Hare Krishna mantra. We're chanting Hare Krishna. Of course, this is above material activity. But we don't feel like a, you know, how you feel when you refresh after taking a bath. Bathing the body, you feel very refreshed. And so one might think, well, I'm chanted Hare Krishna for 2 hours, but I don't feel so much refreshed. Well, again, it's subtle. Depends on how much we're contaminated. And in time, actually, one should be able to feel the result of chanting the mantra for several hours. My point is that these influences are very subtle, and one may not be able to distinguish about them immediately at the time. But we want to understand what they are so that we can act for our welfare. So Krishna is explaining the modes of material nature here in Bhagavad Gita so that we can understand how to act for our own best interests. All of us, we're situated somewhere in this combination of gunas in different ways. So we may, our knowledge may be colored in one way, our desire for food in another way, different parts of life, different aspects of life colored by the gunas in different ways. Again, according to how we've associated with it in previous lives, mostly or maybe in this life. So, where is I going with that? Oh yeah, okay. Yeah, so we're influenced in different ways, and therefore, we want to come up. The idea is we want to come up from tamagun to rajagun to sattvagun. And then, beyond sattva, going to what's called shuddha sattva, or pure goodness. This means a transcendental platform. So it's not possible, or let's say it's almost impossible, to come from tamagun immediately to sudasattva, to transcendence. Practically impossible. Or even from rajagun to sudasattva. So we're trying to be devotees of Krishna. We're endeavoring to perform sadhana bhakti so that we can come to that transcendental position of sudasattva. But first we have to rise up from tamas to rajas to sattva. And that gradually by becoming, as we become purified, we'll become free from those influences. We try, or many devotees say endeavor, to do this by staying in the city and continuing to live in the city, which is under the influence of Rajagun primarily, and of course some tamas is there. And they would like to somehow or other come to the transcendental platform in devotional service. But the fact is, it's really not possible. In fact, the actual situation is that such persons do not know how much they're contaminated by the gunas. Again, because they're invisible to us. We just think, look, I've got tilak on, I wear a dhoti once a week when I go to the Sunday feast, right? I'm a devotee. And we, you know, we may think of ourselves in that way. But what is our action? There is one example that comes to mind of one devotee. This is in Ukraine. He wanted to restore his flat. He wanted to fix it all up very nicely. And he made a super luxurious condition on the idea that, yes, I don't want to be in tamagun. So he wanted to be, but it became like, you know, very much rajagun by some estimations. Other devotees were thinking like this, that it was very much rajagun. Rather than being clean and simple and nice, sattva, or staying in this, or leaving the city to, you know, be outside the city, he stayed in the city in the rajagun, and he renovates his flat in the same way, under the influence of rajagun. So the modes are difficult to perceive, to understand. One can look at the nature of their behavior and understand them, but we should see that the symptoms of the lower modes of tamagun, of rajagun, that these symptoms are going away, and in time we're becoming more and more situated in sattvagun. So, what are those symptoms? Krishna explains a little bit about that in the 13th chapter, text 8 to 12. You find it? 13, 8 to 12. Long, long verse. It's, you know, it's five verses together. Chapter 13, text number 8. You got it, okay. So, we'll just read these. Long list. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness among pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and the philosophical search for the absolute truth. All of these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. In the purport, Prabhupada explains that one needs a method of understanding how they are making progress in devotional service, and one can judge by these items. That is, as these qualities are developing more and more in one's character, or the inclination or the tendency for those qualities is developing, then one can understand that they're making progress toward the goal. So, any discussion so far? Maybe we'll do another verse too, if we don't have much discussion. Yes? That's a fact. Yeah. The village, actually, there's generally in most of the villages today, the villages are in both sattva and tamas. There's very little rajagun going on. And sattva and tamas are a little difficult to distinguish from each other because they're both characterized by inactivity. One of the problems is that with the emphasis over the last 20 years, especially after the fall of the Soviet Union, you were under the influence of Soviet Union here? So, Soviet Union, they had collective farms, and they had an ideology of what they were doing. And what my experience in Ukraine showed me is that when the Soviet Union collapsed, they just throughout the Soviet ideology, but they didn't actually replace it with anything. You know, that I have the impression that there was a lot of effort made to promote the concept of communism or Soviet ideology among the people. But then after that fell, there wasn't some effort on the part of the government to promulgate some other ideology. And consequently, what happened was that, and I saw this directly, that people in the villages in Ukraine, they felt abandoned. I met one man, for example, who his job, he would travel around and sell agricultural inputs like fertilizer and seeds and so on. And he was relating to me how he would sometimes go to the villages and the people there, they would tell him, tell us what to do. We don't know what we're doing here. And he said, well, I'd like to, but that's not really my job, you know. But, you know, the point is that the villagers, they were just abandoned basically by the Soviets and left to themselves to figure out. And so generally what I've seen is that the people, they don't know what to do. You know, the young people, they leave. They go to the city. And it's the old people that stay there. That's the way of life that they know. They don't want to change. And so what do? They don't have anything anymore. They don't have any culture. Previously, there was some culture in the villages because in most of them, at least in Ukraine, Russia, there's a cultural house, a place where people would go for dancing and some kind of cultural activity. But those are mostly empty, and what we see instead is everybody has a satellite dish outside their house, and they're getting their culture through the satellite dish. So this happens that without having, you know, the gunas, they have to have some balance, okay? That if it's just like a wheel, right? They put weights on the wheel of the automobile because if they don't, then it's out of balance and it makes a vibration. So if there's too much, if you can think of a wheel with one third sattva, one third rajas, and one third tamas, and they all have to come to 100%. So if one decreases, the other ones have to increase. Or if one increases, the others have to decrease like that. So if there's too much Thomas, let's say, if the emphasis is on Thomas and Sattva without any Rajas, it's out of balance. If there's too much Sattva, there can also be too much Sattva without Rajas and without Thomas, it's out of balance. So what's proper Thomas? Proper Thomas means resting, means ceasing activity, being still, rejuvenation. Sattva means early morning, means spiritual activity, means cleanliness, it means thinking ahead, worship. And then Rajas, of course, means activity for doing the work during the day. So in the villages, all these three should be balanced. And if they are balanced, then the life is actually wholesome and very satisfying. But the problem is that the villages, they don't have leadership anymore. And so it's every man for himself. And unfortunately, the people who live there are more of a Sudra nature. And they degrade to Sudra activities like intoxication. Yeah, it's sad, actually, to see. Are the villages still very much intact here? Are the villages still pretty much existing? Or are they... Everybody's leaving. Yeah.
You can buy all village for a low price.
Oh, yeah? Hey, we should go do that.
Yeah.
Yeah, actually, it's in Spain, there's more than 3,000 empty villages, if you can imagine. And you can go there, you can buy a whole village also for a fairly modest amount of money, a couple hundred thousand euros. So, of course, it needs generally a lot of repair, but compared to, you know, you can spend that on one flat in the city, so. Did I explain what is the gunas tonight? Any questions about that?
Can you explain the difference between Tamas and Sattva? You were saying that the same is that that we rest, but which consciousness?
Okay. So Tamas can mean laziness. Okay? And Sattva means peacefulness. So if you have a lazy fellow sitting next to a peaceful fellow, they're both doing the same thing, right? They're sitting there. Whereas, what's the difference? One may be in meditation. The other one is sleeping. So the point is the characteristic is no activity. Now, Rajas means activity, doing something. Then Tamas, the healthy Tamas is rest, sleeping, which is required. So nothing wrong with that. Not that sometimes people have the idea Tamas is all bad. We don't want any Tamas. But no, there must be Tamas. Because Tamas, when it's balanced properly by Sattva, then it's rejuvenation. When it's not balanced with Sattva, Sattva is diminishing and Tamas is increasing, then it's sleeping 10, 12 hours a day. Like this. Or if there's too much Rajas, which sometimes happens, then people don't have enough Tamas, right? Not enough sleep. And they're all the time pushing themselves, taking, you know, pills and Red Bull and whatever else to be able to function. So they have their characteristic like that. But one, sattva means is uplifting and tamas is degradation. Yeah, so as far as the seasons go, sure, like that. Winter, what can you do in winter, especially if it's severe? So this is indicative of tamas, but again, it should be balanced with sattva so that generally, historically, in villages in the winter, people would do inside activities. They would, for example, harvest the wool, harvest the linen. And so inside in the winter months, they would be active making cloth. And so they would sit, talk, weave cloth, something like this. And then, of course, yes, it's like that. You know, summer is time of activity because that's when the work can get done. Of course, this is different in different parts of the world. Some places have five seasons, some places have six seasons, some places have one season. So, and this is, you know, also the people who live there, they're also conditioned by that kind of activity as well. Anyway, it's a great study. It's a wonderful way to study this material world is by seeing what's going on with the gunas. My spiritual economics book is a analysis of economic behavior according to the gunas, and it was a wonderful study for me to do. And since then, I realized that same book could be written about law or legal system. It could be written about education. It could be written about medicine. Any kind of human activity, you can analyze in terms of the gunas, even the Bhagavatam. In the 12th canto of the Bhagavatam, it says that the Bhagavatam is written from the perspective of the Kshatriya kings. But the Bhagavatam could also be written from the perspective of any of the other social orders, also from the perspective of the Brahmins, from the perspective of the Vaishyas. Just imagine how wonderful that would be to compare different Bhagavatams together like that. Yeah.
I heard that in Thailand they have a different approach to Mahabharata, more pointed to martial arts.
In the where?
Indian. Mahabharata written interpretation.
Where? What place?
Thailand.
Yeah.
Because I was learning some martial arts. And then this devotee who was teaching this, he said that there is King, which lived in Thailand, they didn't teach these techniques to other people, but actually this technique is coming from Yudhishthira. It's called Kalimasada, and this, because Yudhishthira was most powerful with his mind, and this is like the technique that you can influence person with mind. And he said that this is, in this, their Mahabharata, there is more of these techniques.
Might be. Might be, you know, the biggest Hindu temple in the world, Angkor Wat, is there. Right? Or is that, that's Cambodia. And there's some devotees there. They're trying to make a temple. But Thailand, yeah. So it's like that. We see it. China, Thailand, you know, the Southeast Asia, there's a lot more emphasis on martial arts than, you know, the Vedic kings. That's more or less, their martial arts is more or less forgotten. And there's not so much emphasis. Although there are some, there's one group of, Kshatriya, people who come in Kshatriya lineage, and they're trying to actually revive the Kshatriya Dharma. So, Rajputs, from Maharashtra.
I have another question. It's about a quote from Prabhupada where he mentions four kinds of people, and he says that lazy intelligence is the best. And then, you know, it's less intelligent, busy intelligent is the second best, and then busy stupid, and then lazy stupid.
I didn't get it. Which one's the best?
Lazy, intelligent.
Oh yeah, okay. Four kinds of people. Right. So there's lazy, intelligent, active, intelligent, and lazy, foolish, active, foolish. Okay. So the best one is lazy, intelligent, that they can get things done without having to do work. The worst one is active, foolish, because everything they do creates a problem, and they're busy. They're active. And then the other two are somewhere in between. So why do you bring this up?
It seems it's not according to Gunas, because how can this lazy intelligent...
Well, yeah, it could be according to Gunas. Lazy intelligent means there must be... Intelligence means sattva. And, how to get things done is the point. How to accomplish something. So one can, work very hard by themselves and, they can get the job done. But others who are perhaps, if they have more of a social nature, they can engage other people and then together get the work done, or else if one is even a different intelligence, he can just employ people and have them do all of the work. So this is according to the gunas, because this is basically like a vaishya. So he's the boss. He's the one who organizes workers. And why? Because he has more understanding and he knows what to do first, second, third. So the workers, they're the ones who, they don't know what to do. So you could say active foolish. You don't have to use that word as a pejorative, as a something to criticize somebody, but means less intelligent. So they have ability, but they don't know what to do with it. So this is of a sudra nature. The active intelligent, okay, this is maybe a high-class sudra. He knows how to do things and he knows what to do, but he does it all by himself. And because the varnas are distinguished by the gunas, yeah, there's some connection there. Okay.
How are gunas connected to karma, and what changes when we enter the bhakti yoga?
How gunas are connected to karma? Karma is based on desire, right? Now, what do you desire? If you can desire anything at all in the world, what will you desire? Just like, have you heard my karma class? In this karma class I was giving many times around Slovenia. And I was giving the example like this one movie called The Secret. Have you seen the video? Okay, so they say you can have anything you want, huh? By desire. So the question then becomes, all right, if you can get anything you want, what's the best thing to desire? Now, people are going to answer that question in different ways depending upon how they're influenced by the gunas, right? Some people may say, I want happiness and peace. Other people will say, I want a lot of money. Or I want a high-profile position. I want to be influential with people. So people are going to answer this question in different ways depending upon how they're conditioned by the gunas. Okay?
So, but are we influenced by the gunas because of our previous karma?
Yeah, well, guna and karma goes together. Yeah.
So what changes when we...
What changes says, the first thing is one must purify their intelligence by hearing from the spiritual master. And then one can begin to distinguish between the lower self and the higher self. Okay, I'm not the body. Okay, if I'm not the body, then let me act for my eternal benefit, the soul, by changing my behavior, changing my activity. So, karma changes. And guna also changes. Well, it doesn't all happen immediately. For example, guna has a lot to do with the body. Okay? And we're stuck with this body till the end of this life. So that there's only so much that's going to change according to the guna. Okay? Our nature is still fairly fixed. But the karma changes in terms of what is, the guna changes to some degree because we begin, ideally, we begin to lose our inclination, our desire for the degraded things. We want then association with Krishna. We want association with Krishna's devotees. So, in that sense, the gunas are, they change to some degree. Okay, but for example, say like, you use the example here that a malecha, somebody that doesn't follow, everybody in Kali Yuga is born as a Shudra, Shastra says. Why? Because generally there's no Garbhadhan Sanskara, no purificatory ritual to free one from these lower modes. But there's another sloka that says that even somebody who's a dog eater, if they're properly initiated, they're qualified then to perform yajna. Because by initiation, they become purified, free from that. Now, there are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. Some people have the guna of Brahmana. They're intellectual by nature. Somebody have a Shudra by nature. Now, if somebody has Shudra nature, they're initiated, now they can perform the activities of a Brahmana. They can do the yajna. That does not mean they become a Brahman by guna and karma in terms of their intellectual capacity. You follow? In other words, this idea that, okay, that anyone, even a dog eater, can become a Brahmana, more than a Brahmana. It doesn't mean that his character, his basic character has changed. He still may be of a Shudra nature, but he's qualified to perform yajna. This is what it means, a Brahmana or more than a Brahmana, a Vaishnava. Okay? Still, I act according to my guna and karma, the nature of my body.
My question is actually, like, if we wouldn't met a devotee or someone, if we wouldn't be in Bhaktivinoda, we would maybe doing something really...
really foolish.
Yeah. So the things we do here, how is it connected to our karma?
No, it's not karma. No, when one becomes devotee, it's not karma. It's mercy. It's grace. It's grace coming from Prabhupada, from the devotees. How did we get booked?
Actually not leaving our karma.
No, we're changing the karma.
This is beyond karma.
Beyond karma.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. The idea that, you know, if we have karma at the end of this life, either good or bad, we're forced to come back and be born again. But for the devotee, he frees himself from karma, both the good karma and the bad karma. So that end of this life, no karma, he's not forced to come back, he can leave, go to the spiritual world. Good news. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah. If you are born like Kshudra, and then Paramahansa says in Seven Gita that we can educate and lift ourselves to another position like Vaishya or Kshatriya or Brahma.
This is this idea of elevating oneself to a higher varna. This is the idea of karmakandas, part of the Vedas. That one can have a nice life in this life, go to heaven afterwards, and then be born again in a higher position. This is karmakanda.
I was more thinking.
And if you're referring to seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, it may be referring to something like that, because that was the context in which Bhagavatam was written.
I was thinking more because Bhava Sankara means that we have which one cannot be determined. That means that we have which one does a little bit.
Yeah? That means that?
More Kshatriya nature can be work on this Kshatriya nature and then we can become
Kshatriya. Shishi Panchatantra ki? Yeah, it's like that, that we have mixed varnas. And so, but the idea is we don't want to be born here again at all, right? Ideally. Huh? So, and if we are, then it's not really according to karma. It's really by Krishna's mercy. Just like Narada, right? Look at what he was in previous life, and then he, next birth, he became Narada Muni. So, you know, things can be very different. Or, who else do we have? An example of not Rishabhdev, Bharat Maharaj. Was born as a deer and then again as Jud Bharat. So, yeah, the rules of karma, they're different for a devotee. Karma has a purpose. The purpose of karma is to basically to instruct. Some people they can only learn by the stick, right? So they're a little dull. But if you can learn without the stick, if you can learn, the best way is to learn by hearing. And if you can do that, there's no need for the stick. There's not even need for example. So that's the idea. For those who can learn, the karma is not necessary. For those who actually understand the principles of the material world, how this world is working, what is the nature of spirit, karma is not needed for them. Or for others, people who want to enjoy the illusion of material world, they must have karma. Otherwise, they will not be able to have the illusion that they want. Okay?
I was thinking because Prabhupada said that we must establish Varnashrama College. We are still Vaishnavas, but we must still go to the lectures. He said, we have not enough Brahmanas, now it's time to establish leaders, Kshatriyas, and establish Vaishnavas.
Okay. Yeah, well, there's a question whether we're qualified to train anybody in those things. We're trying to become trained ourselves in understanding Krishna consciousness, but Vanashram Dharma is actually, it's Manu Samhita. Have you read?
Yeah, some part, but it's difficult. You are saying that it's for something, it's written for Satyuga, that Vanashram is.
No, it's, well, there's misunderstanding about that also. Because there's devotees sometimes say, quote, one letter Prabhupada wrote to some devotees saying that we're not qualified to follow Manu Samhita. And so I knew the devotee that letter was written to. I know him. So I wrote to him and I asked him, what did you write to Prabhupada that Prabhupada responded in this way? And it's got not much at all to do with following Manusamhita like we might expect. He and his wife, they were trying to have a child and they were having difficulty. So in Manusamhita, there's some technique, some worship of, I don't know, Deva or something like that, if one wants to beget a child. And so they wrote to Prabhupada and asked him, should they do that? And Prabhupada said, never mind that. You just depend on Krishna, you know, for this. So Prabhupada was not referring to that, to not following Manusamhita. In fact, if you see other places in his purports, Prabhupada glorifies Manusamhita. And in fact, he says that we should be following Manu. And Manu itself says that Manusamhita is for all four ages. It's also for Kali Yuga. Now, we won't immediately be able to do everything in Manu because there's, you know, some things like, you know, chopping off hands, you know, for thieves or something like that, which, you know, we're not going to do. But other parts of it, you know, especially in terms of social organization, that we have to understand, because if we're going to guide society, this means organizing cooperative activity between people. And there has to be rules how people are going to follow for that. And there has to be some, you know, if people get out of line, then there has to be some punishment. So there must be people who are qualified in understanding these things. When you talk about setting up an alternative culture, it's not a simple thing, you know?
I'm not saying that, for instance, you can have temple president who is not distributing books for the candles. This is Vaishnava temple, but you can have Kshatriya.
This is not Vanashram Dharma.
But it's connected with mentality, but it's Vaishnava temple.
It's connected with the mentality. In other words, a man who's going to be temple president, he should have somewhat of a Kshatriya nature. Yeah. If he doesn't, he's not going to be a good temple president. You know, anybody can fulfill that role. If a Sudra does it, you know, somebody of a Sudra mentality, okay, they can fulfill the post and things can go on, but it's not going to be nearly the dynamic place that it would be if you had a Kshatriya for leadership. So, but it's, again, that's a very, very minor, you know, segment. You know, one temple is not much compared to an entire culture.
Because for Kshatriya also you have Raja Rishi is different than the ordinary soldier who is also Kshatriya.
Yeah.
But you can report all the world, one is just one better.
Yeah. And there's others, there's, I think, 8 kinds of brahmanas also. So, who's doing what? There's brahmanas who are teachers, brahmanas who do yajna, brahmanas who are like Chanakya Pandit, who give advice to kings. I don't even know the rest. So, yeah, it's not a simple thing. Very, a lot of study required.
Yeah, because I agree that you cannot just, I am Kshatriya and now I am just taking all my hands and then everything will collapse and because you don't have knowledge.
That's right.
Through this quality that we can become leader of, that will change all the world.
Yeah. Okay, time to stop. Jana Prabhupada ki. Hare Krishna.